It's time for the SwampSwamiSports.com audio podcast.
Here's a question. Will ESPN become the next Sears robot? This week, Disney, the parent company of ESPN, will be reducing the headcount at its sports division once again. ESPN laid off about 300 air and technical staffers back in 2020. The parent company's Encore CEO, Bob Iger, who returned to the company last November to help reverse the company's flagging stock price, had indicated recently that more layoffs are forthcoming for Disney and its ESPN division. Now, all of this comes as Disney's ESPN is negotiating a new contract to cover the NBA basketball games again. That new deal is expected to cost more than the $1.4 billion already being paid to the basketball league. Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Fire the cameraman. We've got to save money to pay for those NBA games. ESPN has lost its way and boxed itself into a financial corner. So how did this all happen? The Entertainment and Sports Programming Network, ESPN, was founded in 1979 during the early years of cable television. It immediately became a must-have cable television channel for most of us sports fans. When it was getting started, ESPN struggled to fill its 24-hour sports schedule in the early years. They were starting from scratch. ESPN had to cut deals with small conferences to telecast college basketball games. The legendary Dick Vitale's long career as a college basketball analyst actually began in 1979 in the earliest days of ESPN. And Dickie V, don't you doubt it, helped to build the popularity of ESPN during those critical early years. College baseball and softball games also became part of the early schedule. Tennis matches, sports car racing, fishing shows, rodeos, and nearly any athletic event, including cheerleading competitions, helped ESPN to fill out that 24-hour schedule at a reasonable cost of production. ESPN's frequent Sports Center programs provided Americans with an opportunity to watch video highlights from earlier college and professional games involving your favorite teams. If your favorite baseball or basketball team was playing one of those late-night West Coast games, Sports Center was there to eventually show you the highlights and the final score. And prior to that, you had the hope that your local newspaper did not go to press before the West Coast games had been completed. Otherwise, you were out of luck. So back in 1979, there was no significant competition for ESPN. Cable TV was in its infancy with only about 15 million subscribers around the country. WTBS in Atlanta, Georgia started off the national cable television trend. It was a local UHF station in Atlanta that went to satellite and became the Superstation in 1976. TBS turned the Atlanta Braves into Mid-America's baseball team from April through October. Founder Ted Turner later assembled the cable news network team and went national in 1980. MTV, remember when they actually featured music? Began on cable television in 1981. The Weather Channel debuted in 1982, and in those early days, the Weather Channel's local weather on the 8s was actually true. Today, it means you have to wait till 18 or 48 minutes past the hour. Do they really think we're that dumb? Another early cable television favorite channel was the Madison Square Garden Network. They famously provided a national television audience for Vince McMahon's fledgling wrestling outfit called the WWF. They later changed their name to WWE. The MSG Network also carried New York Yankees baseball and New York Rangers hockey games. However, it was ESPN which was able to execute a vision to become America's premier sports programming network. Back in 1979, when ESPN got started, sports programming for the traditional big three networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC, was generally confined to Saturday and Sunday afternoons. The NFL and NBA were the exclusive domain of those traditional TV networks, as local television signals covered most of the country without any cost to customers. Major League Baseball was relegated to the Saturday afternoon game of the week on NBC, and good luck if your favorite teams were not the Yankees, the Red Sox, or the Dodgers. Fox Sports? Hey, they didn't even come into existence for another 15 years in 1994. During the 1980s, ESPN's skyrocketing popularity allowed the network to require local cable operators to pay them a monthly fee based on the number of cable households in the local market. That was quite uncommon at the time. Did you know that your local cable television operator was being paid by some of the cable channels they were carrying, like those home shopping networks? ESPN's founders sold their fledgling operation to ABC just 5 years into it in 1984. And ABC would later be acquired by Disney in 1996. As ESPN's popularity grew, so did the public's appetite to see more sports on weekdays and at night on the weekend. ESPN was able to successfully bid for the rights to cover more and more college and professional sports. The network was more than happy to keep passing along those additional costs to you, the customer at home. Network fees charged by ESPN to those cable operators have significantly grown over the years. It's one thing to be charged an extra few dollars per month per household for your favorite sports channel and hope that your cable customers will not mind paying that extra money. But ESPN started to see even more competition for the rights to broadcast major league sports and major college athletic conferences, too. To keep growing and providing sports viewers with their favorite sports at home, ESPN reached into your pocket and paid dearly for the NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, and major college sports. To recover those ballooning costs, ESPN reportedly charges cable television operators about $13 per month per household for its family of sport networks today. Now, Economics 101 reminds us about the elasticity of demand. Here's an example. When your local pizza parlor charged you $10 for a large pizza, you probably returned fairly often. But when the price of that pizza went up to $15, you started to think about it a little bit more. Maybe you didn't go as often. But once that price climbed to $20 for pizza, most of us will find a way to find some cheaper dining. And at that point, you've reached your limit and you might refuse to participate any longer. And that's where we are right now with ESPN. Sure, they still provide us customers with generally good sports programming. However, there comes a time when the service provider is now charging you more than you're willing to pay. ESPN has misjudged its customers and how much they were willing to pay for those services. Cable television operators have become faced with a very difficult choice. If they should drop ESPN and its cost, will their customers drop them by a proportionate amount? Now, as a customer, you get to open up that monthly bill and make your own judgment. How much is too much for you to pay for your cable television sports programming every month? The rising cost has led millions of former cable television customers to actually cut that cord. And the market has been speaking in recent years. It's ESPN that hasn't been listening. ESPN believed that its customers would continue to agree to pay for higher costs to see the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, and college football, and many other sports. With cable television systems losing customers by the millions in recent years, though, ESPN's base of revenues has been shrinking, too. Disney recently reorganized its mammoth company into just three divisions: entertainment, theme parks, and ESPN. Now, the prevailing thought has been that Disney might sell ESPN outright to someone, or perhaps try to spin off the division as a separate stock entity. Well, that would not be a win for Disney shareholders, though. Let me explain. Suppose you owned 150 shares of Disney stock today, and the company announces, "Congratulations, we're splitting up into three separate entities. You now own 50 shares of Disney Entertainment, 50 shares of Disney Theme Parks, and 50 shares of ESPN stock." Disney's combined market value would plummet quickly as ESPN shares would be dumped. It appears that Disney may be stuck with ESPN right now, unless perhaps there is a wealthy corporation, are you listening, Amazon, willing to pay Disney to take ESPN off their hands. Now, even if the deal involves a loss for Disney in the short term, ESPN would become someone else's problem. ESPN has tried to become all things sports to all people. The market has changed significantly, though, since its beginnings in 1979. The competition has increased and become smarter and tougher. ESPN's viewership has dwindled. And don't forget about that internet. It promises to keep causing more market disruptions for years to come. In the meantime, ESPN just keeps on doing what it has been doing, even after it lays off that poor cameraman soon. This story reminds me of the decline of a former retail giant, Sears Roebuck & Company. As Sears grew nationwide during the 1900s, it continued to try to be all things to all people. niche operators developed and nibbled away at portions of Sears' expansive retail business. And over time, the company became too slow to respond to changing market conditions. It was a bloated and stubborn organization with significant overhead, debt, and not enough customers remaining willing to support it. In the past two decades, store after store for Sears has closed, and they've nearly disappeared from the retail landscape. ESPN's product life cycle peaked a long time ago. Will they become the next Sears? I'm Swamp Swami. Happy trail.